campaigns. He wanted work. There was work aplenty for a man not too proud. The Eternal Guard were well paid. Many hired drudge work taken off their duties. At that time, a regiment garrisoned the Barrowland. Countless civilians orbited its compound. Corby vanished among those. When companies and battalions transferred out, he was an established part of the landscape. He washed dishes, curried horses, cleaned stables, carried messages, mopped floors, peeled vegetables, assumed any burden for which he might earn a few coppers. He was a quiet, tall, dusky, brooding sort, who made no special friends, but made no enemies either. Seldom did he socialize. After a few months, he asked for and received permission to occupy a ramshackle house, long shunned because once it belonged to a sorcerer from Orr. As time and resources permitted, he restored the place, and like the sorcerer before him, he pursued the mission that had brought him north. 10, 12, 14 hours a day, Corby worked around town, then went home and worked some more. People wondered when he rested. If there was anything that detracted from Corby, it was that he refused to assume his role completely. Most scut boys had to endure a lot of personal abuse. Corby would not accept it. Victimize him, and his eyes went cold as winter steel. Only one man ever pressed Corby once he got that look. Corby beat him with ruthless, relentless efficiency. No one suspected him of leading a double life. Outside his home, he was Corby the Swamper, nothing more. He lived the role to his heart. When he was home, in the more public hours, he was Corby the Renovator, creating a new home from an old. Only in the wee hours, while all but the night patrol slept, did he become Corby the Man with a Mission. Corby the Renovator found a treasure in a wall of the wizard's kitchen. He took it upstairs, where Corby the Driven came up from the deeps. The scrap of paper bore a dozen words scribbled in a shaky hand. A cipher key. That lean, dusky, long, unsmiling face shed its ice. Dark eyes sparkled, fingers turned up a lamp. Corby sat, and for an hour stared at nothing. Then, still smiling, he went downstairs and out into the night. He raised a hand in gentle greeting whenever he encountered the night patrol. He was known now. No one challenged his right to limp about and watch the constellations wheel. He went home when his nerves settled. There would be no sleep for him. He scattered papers, began to study, to decipher, to translate, to write a story letter that would not reach its destination for years. Chapter 5. The Plane of Fear. One Eye stopped by to tell me Darling was about to interview Corder and the messenger. "She's looking peaked, Croker. You've been watching her." "I watch. I advise. She ignores. What can I do?" "We got 20-some years till the comet shows. No point her working herself to death, is there?" "Tell her that. She just tells me this mess will be settled long before the comet comes around again, that it's a race against time." "She believes that, but the rest of us cannot catch her fire. Isolated in the plane of fear, cut off from the world, we find the struggle with the lady sometimes slips in importance. The plane itself too often preoccupies us.